Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2018. And with me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Oh, splendid.
I'm so glad you're here. Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm happy to be with you. I don't know about Brian, though.
I get it, brother.
It's a fair cop. Hey, Kelly Gaumont filled in for me yesterday because I was out for the day. Thank you, Kelly.
Indeed.
Kelly rocks. She's got my back. And, and the show was great. So thank you, Kelly. And hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is LinkedIn Jobs, which is awesome. And they have a deal for you guys. And I'll tell you about that soon. First, though, since I was out yesterday, I missed all the news about this Apple Factory thing. Tell me about this, Brian.
Right. So Apple apparently leased. I forgot we were talking about this, by the way.
Oh, Apple surprise.
Apple apparently leased 300,000 square feet. 314,000, echoes, like 313,798 square feet, or something like that, right?
Mostly pedantic.
More than 300,000 feet. Square feet of industrial manufacturing space in Milpitas.
Okay.
And that is, it's interesting for a number of reasons. One, it was the Silicon Valley Business Journal who reported this, and they've been doing a great job of covering Apple's and the rest of Silicon Valley's real estate goings on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And but they didn't make it clear. I mean, like, this could be warehousing space or it could be manufacturing space. And we have no one has any idea what Apple actually intends to do with it. It's a new development. Apple signed a 10-year lease. They're paying like 90 cents a square foot for it. And it reduced the vacancy rate in Silicon Valley as a whole. For this kind of space, from 1.5% to 0.7%.
Wow!
So to say it's the real estate market for industrial warehouse space or industrial manufacturing space, I mean, is tight is a an understatement to say the least. And so the question, of course, is what is Apple going to do with it?
That's a good question.
It's really easy to rush to the thought that, well, Apple's going to make cars there. Or Apple's going to make something there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is, in fact, a rush. Here's the big thing. Just because Apple signed this deal now does not mean they intend to use it now. The real estate market for this type of space is so incredibly tight that Apple may well have known that if they wanted to use this 5 years from now, they've got to sign for it today.
And signing for it today also means not only have they locked in the space, but they've been able to get a better price on it than if they tried to get it 5 years from now.
Yeah, well, maybe, but that means they would be paying for 5 years of not using it.
So for 5 years, Apple employees can play laser tag at lunch.
Yeah, they could. Sweet. Right. In this scenario, that is true. But it's equally conceivable that Apple does intend to use it right away, or they intend to use it, like next year, or they're thinking just a little bit ahead. But it could also be used for warehousing something. Or it could be used for if it could be used for final assembly. I don't know that 300,000 square feet is really like enough to make cars, for instance. That seems kind of small. But maybe it's for making something else, or maybe it's for testing, for like R&D testing of some sort.
That's what I was wondering. Maybe this is a facility that they're going to use for R&D, for prototype testing, and it's not going to be one specific product or range of products that's
right
being manufactured.
Yeah, I mean, like maybe they're going to be introducing a line of drones, so they need some indoor flying space. It's possible.
That'd be a nice space for drones.
It would be. It's not probable, but it's certainly possible. And the problem for speculating, and it's fun to speculate, but the problem for doing any kind of speculation on this is that there are so many different kinds of things that Apple could be doing with it. And I don't think a rush to judgment on any one given thing is prudent. And I like, so for instance, one of the things that has not been done is there have been no paperwork filed with the city of Milpitas.
To do what?
Exactly.
To
do anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
So since I was out yesterday and didn't get to go digging to see what people were saying about this, I'm just curious. Has anyone been speculating, Apple's going to make iPhones or iPads there, which I cannot imagine would be even remotely possible because it takes an area the size of a city to produce iPhones and iPads.
Yeah, Apple would not be making iPhones in Silicon Valley or iPads in Silicon Valley. Apple's probably not even going to make Macs in Silicon Valley. Do you remember back when Apple used to make new Macs?
Yeah. So Brian, that was actually a pretty easy assumption that they wouldn't make Macs in Silicon Valley because where do they make them?
Because anyhow, they don't make Macs at all anymore, it seems. But they wouldn't. I mean, 300,000 square feet wouldn't be enough for diddly. For when it comes to making something on that scale, it could be a space used for assembling something that's being mostly manufactured somewhere else, mm-hmm. or it could be a staging area. It could be, I don't know. It could just be lots of things. I mean, it's a lot of space, but it's not that much space. Which is interesting.
How about a chip manufacturing facility?
Conceivable. I doubt it's big enough for that. And at this point, it's also hard to imagine that Apple would want to bring in the fabbing process in-house.
They did just hire the engineers and or they bought the engineers and a lot of other stuff from which company is it? I wrote about it, I think, last week, which accounts for I can't remember it because it's farther back than lunch yesterday. But Apple just bought the people and, I believe, assets from one of their chip manufacturing partners.
But it wasn't TSMC.
No, it was not TSMC.
And there's a lot of reasons why Apple might want to bring those folks on. I just saw a typo in my article. There's a lot of reasons why Apple might want to bring on that kind of expertise. That doesn't necessarily mean that Apple's going to do the doing.
True. I'm just tossing stuff out there because I love making people think.
I don't think that would be enough space for a fab.
Certainly not a large scale fab.
Certainly not a large scale fab, and the reality is that even if Apple was using was just manufacturing its own chips for the Mac, despite my snarky comments earlier, that's not a small scale operation.
All right, so before we move on, I'm going to toss this out just because I know how much John loves the idea of robots. What if this is a facility where Apple can manufacture prototype robots and test them?
Yeah, I like it. Giddy up.
Autonomous robots driving around doing mapping. That's been my thing. Little cars that drive all over the U.S., hundreds, thousands of them, zooming here and there, taking photos, mapping.
Yeah, but not. That's not what they're.
I think Apple will do that. Whether they're doing it in the Milpitas facilities,
whether or not they're going to build their own cars for that. There's a lot of reasons to start making your own car. To just have them taking pictures for you. is it'd be a lot cheaper to buy someone else's car for that.
Yeah. Buy a bunch of cars, retrofit them.
Yeah.
John, my idea was a lot sexier, though. I was thinking build robots, and then part of the facility is set up like for parkour, and then they have these robots running and jumping around and doing all kinds of really cool things.
No, but Apple, the manufacturing robots, that is the kind of, like, manufacturing robots, that is the kind of thing that Apple could use this kind of space for. I like that idea.
R&D for the design and construction of robots that in turn do manufacturing?
Just manufacturing them. Or both. Yeah. R&D and the design and manufacturing. Yeah. I mean, that's like Apple wouldn't need to make those kinds. Apple is heavily invested in developing its own machinery for manufacturing that third party companies end up utilizing for them. Right. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of thing that, you know, Apple would need to be making millions and millions and millions of, because it's stuff just for them. So, and you could definitely see them wanting to do all that sort of stuff in Silicon Valley.
I like that.
See, I knew you'd like that idea, John. All right. We have to move on because we have more to talk about. And I want to tell people about our sponsor today. So here's a scenario. Let's say that you have an employee that's moving on to another opportunity. You need to replace them, and you want to find.
I'm going to take some notes.
Yeah, good call. And so you want to replace that person, and you want to find someone that's going to be a really good fit, someone that's interested in what your company does, someone that has the right training and the right skills and the right experience, not someone that's just looking for a paycheck. So
yes, right. This makes sense so far.
Yeah. So where do you go? Do you just throw an ad out on a bunch of job boards and hope for the best?
Or not so far.
Do you go someplace where you can find the right person most likely right away? I would choose the latter. And
for sure.
Yeah, and that's LinkedIn Jobs. So the deal is, LinkedIn already has 70% of the workforce in the United States on their service, and employers have found that the people that are applying for the jobs they post through LinkedIn Jobs are people that are better skilled, are actually interested in the jobs that they're posting, and tend to be a better fit. So you end up saving time, you end up saving money, and you have a higher likelihood of finding the right person the first time, which is why you're saving time and money. So if you're on the hunt for a new employee, you need to give LinkedIn Jobs a shot. Here's what to do. Hurry to linkedin.com/TDO and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/TDO to get $50 off your first job post. linkedin.com/TDO. Terms and conditions apply. And thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being our sponsor.
And thank you, Jeff.
Hey, you know, we all do our part. So, John, you were looking a little bit at what's going on with Intel and Moore's Law and chips. And I have a feeling this leads to kind of a wall that Intel seems to have hit. Am I interpreting that right?
Well, I ran the article yesterday from it was a link to a Verge article about Intel having difficulty moving to 10 nanometer production process. That's billionth of a meter, nanometer, and it's the size of the transistor gates. So I started doing some poking around and refreshed my memory about the Apple A12 Bionic chip, which is its 7-nanometer production process. And then I did some more poking around, and I found that AMD has moved on to 7-nanometer CPUs. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing some reading, and I learned a lot of stuff in the meantime. The size of the transistor gates is not the only factor that affects the performance of the processor. There are several different metrics. There is the issue of the design of the cache and the layout of the chip. There's a question about which metric you use for performance. The size of the transistor gates in nanometers is not necessarily the only factor that dictates the performance of the chip. So what it really boils down to is some PR. Getting to 7 nanometers is a really cool thing to do because there's quantum effects that start coming into play across the traces. And so there's a lot going on here, and I've learned a lot in the meantime. So the bottom line is that it's not just the size of the transistor gates in nanometers, but the overall performance of the chip. And Intel likes to have its own metrics, which it thinks are better, in millions of logic transistors per square millimeter. So the real proof in the pudding is real-world cross-platform benchmarks to determine whether going to 7 nanometers is getting you anything, in addition to saving perhaps power, making it more energy efficient. So that's the story.
Well, okay, so my feeling, and maybe this is just a knee-jerk reaction, is that it feels like other companies are surpassing Intel's capabilities, which doesn't look good for Intel.
Because, that's true.
Because we have companies like AMD that's doing 7-nanometer process chips, which you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Apple has TSMC making 7-nanometer chips for A-series processors, and it feels like Intel just can't keep up.
And I was thinking that maybe this is something to do with Apple's impatience with Intel, with their rollout cycle, the product lineup fitting Apple's needs, and the performance in terms of low power derived from the process size in nanometers. So it seems to tie in my mind together with Apple's potential movement to the A series chips and the Macs starting in 2020, as Ming-Chao Kuo has predicted recently. So there could be some connection between Intel's inability to get to Cannon Lake, which is a 10 nanometer process.
Hold on.
Apple's impatience.
I'm going to let you finish, but first I'm going to go get some tools to tear down that pedestal you're wanting to prop back up for Ming-Chi Kuo. Guy says a lot of things that don't happen.
Yeah, but it's corroboration, because we've seen signals from different sources, I believe. So he's just sort of weighing in, and when you get enough sources saying the same thing, you start to put a picture together.
This is true. Okay, anyway, I just don't get it. But I would say you mentioned, John, you said like Apple's growing frustration, I think you said, about Intel with processors. I think this ship has sailed, that Apple is making this transition, and its growing frustration may have been that was something that happened years ago, and now it's done, and Apple is going to move to its own processors for Macs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
I believe that it's curious. Coffee Lake was starting to ship in the fall of 2017, and the PCs were all over it. I don't know yet why Apple couldn't get its hands on Coffee Lakes until July for the MacBook Pros. Maybe the Coffee Lakes were a series, and the high-powered desktops came out early, and the low-power mobile units came out later. I don't have a track on that, but it seems like Apple's been kind of late to the game in getting its CPUs compared to the PC world.
It seems that way to you? No, it totally is that way. Apple is always at least months behind their PC competitors in rolling out new chips, and in some cases, it's more than months before they actually update a Mac to have a new processor.
And maybe because Apple doesn't order them in enough quantity to get high up on Intel's hit list, Apple's tired of waiting.
Well, Apple also might just not, Apple might be demanding a price that Intel doesn't want to meet, too.
Yeah, well, Intel will probably say, buy more.
Apple could
buy more, we would charge you less. So sell more Macs, Apple.
Yeah. Brian, what's the one crazy trick that Apple could do to sell more Macs?
That, that one weird trick, what we found repeatedly in the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years is that Apple can release new models to goose sales.
Does that work?
Yes.
Surprisingly, wow. Yeah.
Wow, Apple ought to do that.
Apple ought to do that.
Yeah.
Like whenever Apple releases new models, sales boost. It's weird. It's just
that one crazy
fascinating
trick.
It's that one weird trick.
Well, I have moved on from my skepticism about Apple abandoning Intel, and I think now it's just a matter of time. And yeah, Apple's going to be using their own chips for all their products. And they will no longer be at the mercy of Intel to get the processors they want for the computers they want to make. It's just a matter of time. Hey, we are out of time, so we need to wrap up. John, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
For sure, man. Thanks for having us. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you on today. Thanks again to Kelly for covering for me yesterday. And also thank you to LinkedIn Jobs for being our sponsor today. Head over to linkedin.com/TDO to get $50 off your first job post. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.